Hello, and welcome to a very special holiday edition of Northern Latitudes. I'm Bill Ault, and as the snow settles outside and the year comes to a close, we're taking a moment to reflect on the incredible conversations we've shared this year. From Global Insights with Gwynne Dyer.
It is an exam we could fail, but we haven't failed it yet. I mean, the midterm, I think, was probably not having a nuclear war, and we've done rather well on that. 79 years without a nuclear war.
To environmental challenges and innovative ideas from Alex Gottlieb and Andrew DeRocher.
And that's what we do in this study for all of these major river basins across the Northern Hemisphere. We can look at our estimates of what snowpack has done historically and what it might have been absent climate change. And
I think we need technology to come online. I'm a firm believer that we have to look at all solutions that are less carbon intensive. And for me, that includes nuclear energy.
It's been a year of thought-provoking and inspiring discussions. And what better way to celebrate the season than with a mix of reflection, a sprinkle of nostalgia, and of course, some very special Christmas memories from our guests. And in the spirit of the season, we're bringing you a little extra cheer with heartfelt Christmas memories from some of our favorite voices. Here's Trixie Paxis talking about how skiing became part of her Christmas.
I live in Kimberley now, and Christmas has largely been skiing at the local resort. So I feel quite lucky that I can walk out my front door between Christmas festivities and get some laps in with family.
Jane Marshall shares how landscape shaped who she is.
Oh, see, it's not an easy question. It's a hard one because I feel like so many different landscapes have shaped my perspective and who I am. But definitely one of the big ones, I would say, is Tsum in Nepal.
And Megan Ward talks about a special skating place.
I just have really wonderful memories of course, like skating on the canal when it would actually be open earlier in the winter.
Yeah.
But also there's marshland behind my parents' house that floods.
Join all those and others for a journey through the highlights of 2024, and let's celebrate the magic of the season together. They say you should never meet your heroes, but I had the privilege of meeting one of my literary heroes this year when I spoke with the renowned journalist, historian, and author Gwynne Dyer. For decades, Gwynne has been a leading voice in dissecting global affairs with clarity, insight, and wit. His work spans some of the most pressing issues of our time, from international conflicts to climate change. We dove into his latest book, Intervention Earth, a thought-provoking exploration of geoengineering and what it might mean. And despite what it might mean, Gwynne remains hopeful for humans.
It is an exam we could fail, but we haven't failed it yet. I mean, the midterm, I think, was probably not having a nuclear war, and we've done rather well on that. 79 years without a nuclear war. Would any of the people in that movie that was doing the rounds, Oppenheimer, last year in 1945, have thought, oh, well, yeah, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, World War II, but we'll be fine. There won't be another nuclear war for 79 years. Nobody thought that. So that was the midterm, and we passed, conditionally. But you know, this is, you know, you take a bunch of people, human beings, who've never lived in groups of more than 100, and who are hunter-gatherers at war with all the other groups around them, and have been ever since they walked upright. And you put them in clothes and make them live in cities of millions, in countries of tens or hundreds of millions. And you've got a whole lot of adjustments and learning curves to climb, you know, adjustments to do, learning curves to climb. We're not built for this. We're very flexible, but we are on learning curves, socially, culturally, and you know, we're not bad. We're not, there's no guarantee. Especially with this stuff, because we're operating in the dark. A lot of what's waiting out there for us, we actually haven't got a map on, especially sort of tipping points and feedbacks and things like that. It's not just the steady, slow growth of emissions with what they call linear curves. You know, it's a steady, smooth curve rising gently. There's also landmines. We are walking through landmines. You step on that one, you get to that temperature, and you trigger a feedback that will give you a lot of rapid warming, and that you can't turn off. Once you trigger it, you're stuck with it. And there's about a dozen of them. So, you know, we got to learn to dance between that as well. But, you know, so far so good.
It's the time of the year when we all start wishing for a white Christmas. Snow is one of the most contradictory cues we have for understanding climate change. In many recent winters, the lack of snowfall in December, like this year, seemed to be a preview of our global warming future. Now, a new study from Dartmouth University, authored in part by my guest PhD student Alex Gottlieb, cut through the uncertainty in these observations and provided evidence seasonal snowpacks throughout most of the Northern Hemisphere have indeed shrunk significantly over the past 40 years due to human-driven climate change.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we do in this study for all of these major river basins across the Northern Hemisphere. We can look at our estimates of what snowpack has done historically and what it might have been absent climate change. And basically what we get are two big statistical distributions for each of those things. And we can compare the actual values of, you know, our historical trends and these counterfactual trends. And that's what lets us say that in places like the St. Lawrence River Basin, for instance, that the likely effect of climate change is that it has reduced snowpack by about 7% per decade or so over the last 40 years. So we're actually able to quantify the effect of climate change on our long-term snow trends by combining all of these observations of snow and these climate model simulations. I mean, for these places that are beyond the snow loss cliff, where their average winter temperatures make them incredibly sensitive to small increases in wintertime temperatures, that is our expectation, is that snow loss is only going to accelerate in those places. The flip side of that is that that makes the mitigation for, you know, halting and ultimately reducing warming a really strong imperative in these places, because we're so sensitive to even small increases in temperature. And so, you know, if we have any hope of protecting our winter snowpack in these places, you know, insofar as we can limit any further warming, that is the only thing that's going to do it. Because what this work shows is that once you're off the edge of that cliff, that snow's not coming back.
Andrew DeRocher has been studying polar bears for over 40 years, focusing on their ecology, conservation, and management. He is a professor at the University of Alberta and has contributed to numerous scientific studies, policy discussions, and conservation initiatives aimed at understanding and preserving polar bears and their Arctic habitat. At the end of our discussion, we ended up talking about technology and the hope that it brings to not just the polar bears, but us.
You know, there's glimmers of hope all the time, I think, when we look at the issues of how we're going to address climate change. And I think that there's reasons for being optimistic. You know, where I live in Edmonton, it's a sunny place. I'm pretty sure if I could scrape together enough money to put solar panels on my roof, I could do pretty good here, at least some part of the year. I think we need technology to come online. I'm a firm believer that we have to look at all solutions that are less carbon intensive. And for me, that includes nuclear energy. I have a lot of sort of faith in engineering and engineers to find the solutions that we need. We can live a lot smarter than we currently do. I don't think we have to live worse either. But I think there are going to be real challenges going forward. But wind, solar, nuclear, hydro, geothermal, we're pretty clever as a species, but we do have a time constraint on how clever we're going to be and when we're going to get to these points. And so I am concerned, because I think by the time polar bears get into real serious trouble as a species, sort of in the later part of this century, we're going to be dealing with other more challenging issues like sea level rise, mass migration of humans, where are we getting drinking water from, our agricultural systems. All these sorts of things are going to be raising a lot of challenges for humanity. And at that point, the priority might not be, you know, should we, you know, send in emergency food to the last 500 or 1,000 polar bears that are still around in this remnant population in the very high Arctic? Is that going to be the priority for humanity at that point? It is challenging to see the future. And, you know, at some point it gets to be a bit of science fiction rather than science. So you have to, you know, you have to walk a thin line there. But I'm cautiously optimistic that the future will work out okay. But it also is predicated on taking strong measures now. And I lectured today to students on campus here, and I told them, you should be making sure that you're taxing old people like me to pay for the damage that's been done, because the solutions cannot be borne only by the future generations. And we have to look at putting in place mechanisms now. I mean, I'm not in love with paying my taxes, but I do it, and I do it willingly, because I do believe in the social good that comes from them.
For the second half of this episode, I decided to invite some of this year's guests back to answer one quick surprise question and then perhaps share a Christmas story with us. Up first was Trixie Paxis. My question to Trixie was, how much does nature enhance your films? And then I asked her to follow that up with a Christmas tradition.
All my films are set with nature as a backdrop, but nature is so much more than that. I think it's really the spark and the inspiration, both for myself and largely for the characters that I've been lucky to document. With Wild Ariel, the adventure aerials that I document, Sasha Galitsky is fascinated by ice. And her performances, usually Ariel Silks was performed indoors in studios, but she rigs her silks outdoors in canyons and on glaciers to use movement to portray how beautiful and fragile ice can be. And it's that duality of this environment that really sparks her creativity. So she's a great example of someone who, when you see her moving in that environment, she just becomes one with the environment. It's beautiful to see, and I hope our film can help take people to, you know, a front row seat for a performance like that. And then with Wildflowers, we just have a film about women across time who find inspiration in nature. It's, you know, a place where they can unleash their sense of adventure, and it's also a place where they can unleash their creativity. And I think they wouldn't be the same people without, you know, having the inspiration and space to do those things.
And as far as for you and the outdoors, how does outdoors, do you have a favorite outdoor Christmas story or a time spent outdoors at Christmas?
I live in Kimberley now, and Christmas has largely been skiing at the local resort. So I feel quite lucky that I can walk out my front door between Christmas festivities and get some laps in with family. My family immigrated from the Philippines, and my parents did not do any winter sports or really anything outdoors. And so when we first moved here, like, my childhood memories of Christmas are like tobogganing and sledding on like a tiny, tiny hill in the suburbs of Vancouver. So that was as outdoorsy as it got at Christmas when we were younger. But then as we got older, my sister and I both got into skiing. I actually started snowboarding, and I only switched to skiing about 3 years ago.
Next up for our rapid fire question was Jane Marshall, the author of one of my favorite reads this year, The Search for Happy Valley, and I'd recommend it to anyone and everyone for your Christmas list. The question for Jane was, how has landscape shaped your identity?
Oh, see, it's not an easy question. It's a hard one because I feel like so many different landscapes have shaped my perspective and who I am. But definitely one of the big ones, I would say, is Tsum in Nepal. Yeah, that place is super special to me. And I almost feel like I knew it before I even saw it. But I feel like when you go to the Himalayas, it can have such a huge impact because the mountains themselves, the land itself, is so big. And I remember the first time I ever saw the Himalayas, like as I was on foot, getting closer and closer, and you're sort of in the foothills, and then a gap will open up where you actually see like the summit of a 6,000 meter peak. And I remember gasping, and my hand went to my heart, and I got tears in my eyes. I couldn't believe the scale of those mountains. And then that place just has pulled me back several times since then for writing my different books. And it's shaped me in so many ways. Like physically, it made me really strong, spending weeks and weeks and weeks hiking in those mountains that are so big, and there's a lot of up and down. So physically, it shaped me by making my legs strong and my endurance stronger. And then mentally and like emotionally, it shaped me too, because I fell in love with the land itself, I would say. And I also fell in love with the people there and started a charity with the local people just to provide basic healthcare and kindergarten. So yeah, it's had a huge impact on me and my family too. I'm not sure. I feel like Christmas is a time actually when we really draw indoors. So it'll be like a time where I just kind of let that go and spend time with family and eat lots of good food, fuel up my body for whatever adventure comes next. So when I think of Christmas, I think about food for sure. And and spending time with like my family, especially as my mom and my in-laws are like my mother and father-in-law, everyone's getting a little bit older. So I just sort of like let go of big aspirations for adventures for that time and getting out as much and just enjoy that inside time with them, if that makes sense.
Our final Christmas special guest was Megan Ward. Megan is one of my favorite interviews. She's been on the show numerous times. I think she's tied for the lead right now with Adam Schultz. Megan always gives thoughtful answers to everything you ask of her. And this time was no different.
I think for Canadians, the holidays bring us inside a lot. There's just a lot of being inside and sitting and luxuriating and all the wonderful things that we treat ourselves to over the holidays. And I think the outdoors gives us a chance to balance all of that on a very kind of physical level. Mm-hmm. It allows us to move a little, breathe a little deeper. And I also know that the holidays can bring up a lot of emotion for people. It does for me. It's a mix of nostalgia, but also some grief, like a form of grief around things that are no longer in our lives. And then this spirit that the Christmas holidays brings out for us of love and belonging and really cherishing the people around us. And I think the outdoors has a way to help amplify all of that for us, but also it's such a wonderful way to process some of those feelings that come up. And time in nature is just so healing on that level for me, that you've reminded me that I need to step out the door more often over the holidays and really let nature work its magic in my life. Growing up in Ottawa, such a wonderful center for outdoor activities and sports, I just have really wonderful memories of course, like skating on the canal when it would actually be open earlier in the winter. But also there's marshland behind my parents' house that floods with water in the fall. And when there's enough of it, it freezes into a pond and creates the most amazing skating rinks. And I can remember as kids just slinging our skates on our backs and trudging through the forest in search of this ice and just skating in and out of the trees. And it was just so magical. Like, you can't make that stuff up.
No,
and so I think that's one that really sticks out to me.
And that brings us to the close of our Christmas special here on Northern Latitudes. As we look back on this incredible year, one thing stands out: the strength of the human spirit. Through challenges, through change, and through moments of uncertainty, we've heard stories of resilience, innovation, and community that remind us of what truly matters. This holiday season, let's hold on to that hope. Let's remember the power of connections, the bonds we share with family, friends, and even strangers who cross our paths. Let's embrace the promise of a brighter tomorrow, knowing that together we can achieve remarkable things. Whether you're celebrating with loved ones, reflecting quietly, or reaching out to someone who might need a little extra joy this season, know that your actions, however small, can create ripples of kindness and hope. From me, Bill Ault, I want to thank you, our listeners, for being part of this journey. Your support, your curiosity, and your open hearts are what make this show possible. I'm Bill Ault, wishing you peace, love, and joy this Christmas, and always. Until next time, stay inspired, stay curious, and have a very Merry Christmas.